All right. Well, it's Monday, December 15th, and we have been looking at diligently seeking God, how important that is, how to seek God, and examples of those that did that, that God was more important to them than anything else in life. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, has the verse that we started with that says, "But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." So when we do believe, then it's possible to please God, to be well-pleasing to God, to have a relationship with him. And it's a rewarding relationship because we're not seeking just the rewards that come from God, but we're seeking God himself, seeking his face, and then let him reward us as he sees fit, because he sees fit to reward his people very well. He's looking for the humble hearts, the ones that want to know him, that want to do his will. And in this chapter of Hebrews 11, there's example after example of those that did that, that were seeking God, that did what they did by believing, not just because they felt like it, not based on any particular strategies that they had of how to get all that they could out of life or out of situations. They just wanted to do the will of God. And last time we looked at Joseph, and this time we're going to look at Moses. Remember in verse 22, it mentions Joseph, that when he died made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandments concerning his bones. And we saw that it was Moses that brought the bones of Joseph out of Egypt when they left. And I think that's really cool, that before they left Egypt, after the Passover, and they went and they crossed the Red Sea and everything, Moses remembered to bring the bones of Joseph. Maybe God reminded him, because Joseph had made the people to swear that. But it's a good thing they brought it along, because otherwise they'd cross the Red Sea and then maybe remember and say, "Oh my goodness, we have to go back and get the bones of Joseph." That would have been a little embarrassing, saying, "Excuse me, but we forgot something. Can we get those bones and bring them with us?" So it's better that they brought them along with when they left. But we want to look at Moses. But before we look at Moses, we want to look at the parents of Moses, because they're mentioned here in verse 23. It says, "By faith," or by believing, "Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents." So it wasn't the believing of Moses, he was just a little baby. It was the believing of his parents, because they saw that he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. So to understand what all this means, we're going to have to go back to the Old Testament in Exodus and look at those records. Plus, there's a great record in Acts where we can learn about this as well, and I want to show that to you as we go. But it says, they saw that he was a proper child. The word proper is from the Greek word asteos, and it's only used here in Hebrews 11:23 and in Acts 7:20. In both cases, it's talking about Moses when he was a little baby. And it means urbane, that means sophisticated, like a city dweller, as opposed to a country bumpkin. And it also means handsome or fair, having polished manners, being elegant. Now, that's not something you normally see in a baby that's just born, and they only had him as a baby there up to 3 months. So there's got to be something more to it. So as we look at these records, we'll be looking for that. We'll want to see what the king's commandment was, and how these two people, and we'll find out who they were, what their names were, and what they did by believing. So let's go to Exodus chapter 1 to get the background of what happened since the end of Genesis, which ended with Joseph being in a coffin in Egypt. And in Exodus 1:1, it says, "Now these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Every man in his household came with Jacob. There was Reuben and Simeon, Levi and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher, and all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls, for Joseph was in Egypt already." Now, it is interesting that in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, in this verse it says that there were 75 souls. When you see the Brenton translation, Brenton was a man who translated the Greek Septuagint version of the Old Testament into English. So that makes it easy to see. But in the Brenton, it says, "But Joseph was in Egypt, and all the souls born of Jacob were 75. But the Hebrew text says that there were 70. Not that it's a big deal. Verse 6, "And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation." Now remember, Joseph was 110 years old when he died. He was 30 when he became the second in command, where Pharaoh promoted him to lead Egypt. So that there was an 80-year period where his family was there with him, and all that generation died. "And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph." So this was a new king, meaning he was from a different family. He wasn't the son or the grandson of the Pharaoh that promoted Joseph to honor and authority. He came from a different family. He may have come from Assyria, because there's a verse in Isaiah 52 I would like to show you. We'll be coming back here. But in Isaiah 52, in verse 4, it says, "For thus saith the Lord God, My people went down aforetime into Egypt to sojourn there, and the Assyrian oppressed them without cause." So this is an indication that the new king of Egypt was from Assyria. Okay? The Assyrian oppressed them without cause. Why would an Assyrian become king of Egypt? Well, I can think of two possible reasons. One would be that a lot of the kings would marry a woman from another country for diplomacy purposes. They would have an alliance because they would have children together, and one of those male children could have inherited the throne. A second possible reason would be that it was a hostile takeover, that the Assyrians attacked in those days and took over Egypt and set up their own king over those people. So one of the two. So back in Exodus chapter 1, where we were, in verse 8, where there rose up a new king over Egypt, and this king did not know Joseph. Now Joseph and all of that generation were dead at this point, but he didn't have any respect for Joseph and who he was and what he did, because he did it for the previous kingdom before he took over, so he didn't help the new king any. So he didn't know Joseph and didn't care much about his family, except it seems that he was concerned about them. In verse 9 says, "And he said unto his people," not the Hebrews, but to his own people, "Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also unto our enemies and fight against us, and so get them up out of the land." So that way of thinking is an indicator that he took over Egypt by force, and he's concerned about somebody else doing the same thing to him. And if that would happen, that the Hebrews would join forces with the enemy and fight against him. That was what he was afraid of. "Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. So they made slaves out of them and forced them to do slave labor, and they afflicted them. And they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Python and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor." Now the word rigor means harshness, severity, cruelty, and it comes from a word that means to break apart or fracture. So they worked them to the breaking point, would be a good way to put it. They got as much out of them as they possibly could. "And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor." just worked him to the breaking point. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiphrah, and the name of the other Puah. So there are only two midwives that were taking care of all these babies being born. And he said, when ye do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, you know, you help them deliver the babies, and you see them upon the stools, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. So this is the command of the king. But the midwives feared God. God was bigger to them than the king was. God was more important to them than the king was. And the will of God was what they were going to do, whether the king liked it or not. So the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, why have ye done this thing and have saved the men children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere or before the midwives come in unto them. So they made up an excuse. Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. So more and more and more Hebrew babies, a lot of them baby boys that grew up to be Hebrew men. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them houses. So they had big families of their own. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. Now, in the Septuagint and in some of the other versions, it says, and Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, whatever male child shall be born to the Hebrews, cast into the river, and every female save it alive. So Pharaoh charged his people, not necessarily the Hebrews, but he charged his own people, the Egyptians, to be on the lookout for any babies that were born of the Hebrews. And if they saw a baby boy, they were to chuck it in the river so that it would die. In the Nile River, you know, there's crocodiles in there. Feed the crocodiles. So that was his command. Because I always thought that he commanded the Hebrew people to kill their own babies, but he said he charged all his people. And we saw there was a difference between his people and the Hebrew people. So he charged his people that any time that they would find a baby boy that was born to the Hebrews, that they were to kill that child by throwing it in the river. Now we get to chapter 2. And there went a man of the house of Levi, and he took to wife a daughter of Levi. So who is this man and who is this woman that's the daughter of Levi? Well, we find out actually in chapter 6. So let's go to chapter 6 and starting in verse 16. This will identify the individuals by name. Verse 16 says, and these are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generations, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. Then it talks about the sons of Gershon in verse 17. In verse 18, talks about the sons of Kohath. And it says, and the sons of Kohath, Amram, and Izhar, and Hebron, and Uzziel. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. So Amram is the son of Kohath, who's the son of Levi. Kohath, as the son of Levi, would have gone into Egypt along with Jacob and all his 11 sons, because Joseph was already there. And then Amram would have been born in Egypt. In verse 20, it says, and Amram took him Jochebed, or Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife. And she bare him Aaron and Moses. And the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. Okay? So this says that it was his father's sister. In the Septuagint, look at the Brenton translation, it says, and Amram took to wife Jochebed, the daughter of his father's brother. That would make him and her first cousins. And she bore to him both Aaron and Moses and Miriam, their sister. And the years of the life of Amram were 132 years. Okay. So the Septuagint sometimes has different details. But either way, they were relatives here in the same family. And he married either his aunt or his cousin, depending on which of those two texts, the Hebrew or the Greek, were more accurate. Now, so we know their names. There's Amram and there's Jochebed. They're both grandchildren of Levi and great-grandchildren of Jacob. Okay? So we're in the same family. Now, let's go back to Exodus chapter 2. Now that we know who these people are, Amram and Jochebed. Verse 2 says, "And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months." So it says, she saw him that he was a goodly child. In Brenton, it says, "And having seen that he was fair, they hid him 3 months." So both of them considered him a goodly child, and both of them together hid the child 3 months. So they had to conceal him so that nobody, you know, none of the taskmasters or any Egyptians that were snooping around could find the child. But verse 3 says, when they could no longer hide him. I don't know, maybe he was crying a lot and they just figured it wasn't safe. Or, again, what they did by believing. So I think it would be more accurate to say that at that time they asked God what to do and God told them what to do. Because when we see the timing of this, you can see God's hand in it, okay? So it would have been God to tell them to hide the child and disobey the king's commandment. And then it would have been God that would have told them, at this time, do this. So when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch. That would make it waterproof so it would float and wouldn't sink. And she put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit or to know what would be done to him. So that's little Miriam would have done that. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river. And her maidens walked along by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child. And behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. So look at the timing of this. Made this little basket, made it waterproof, put the baby in, put it in the water. No crocodile got it. The daughter of Pharaoh. And I don't know if it's his direct daughter, could have been a granddaughter, because the word daughter in Hebrew can mean the direct child, female child of a father, or it could be any relation that's younger than the original one. So it could have been Pharaoh's daughter, or it could have been a granddaughter or a niece, but she was related to Pharaoh. And this is the Pharaoh that had commanded all the Hebrew male children to be thrown in the river, right? And she can say, well, he was in the river. They had thrown him in, but they just put him in a basket first. But she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. And she didn't try to kill the little baby boy. She wanted to keep it. Then said his sister, that would be Miriam, to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. So Moses' own mother got to be the one to feed him and bring him up until he was ready to be on his own and go to Pharaoh's daughter. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman, which would have been Jochebed, took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And Moses means drawn or drew. Drawn like taken out of the water. Like you take a bucket and you draw water out of it. So she called his name Moses. And she said, because I drew him out of the water. And this word drew, it's only used a few other places in the Bible. Here in 2 Samuel and Psalm 18. Let's look at Psalm 18 real quick. Psalm 18, verse 6. I'll just read it to you. It says, he sent from above, he took me, he drew me out of many waters. Okay, so that word drew means to be drawn or rescued out of water. So it wasn't Moses' parents, Amram and Jochebed, that gave him the name Moses. It was Pharaoh's daughter that gave him that name. And in Hebrew, it would be Moshe or Moisha. Now, I'd like to go to Acts chapter 7. In Acts chapter 7, we have a believer named Stephen. He was one of the seven that was chosen to help the apostles with the administrative work, waiting tables, taking care of the widows, and things like that. And he was accused by the unbelieving Jewish people of speaking against God and against Moses. So he's on trial here, and he gives the whole history of his people, which is really cool. In fact, we have a little time. We could just read this because it's a really great way that he put it together. So in verse 1, then said the high priest, "Are these things so that you've spoken against God and against Moses?" That would be blasphemy. That would be punishable by death. And he said, "Men and brethren and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein ye now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on, yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God. And after that shall they come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac and circumcised him the eighth day. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. Now there came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan and great affliction, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent our fathers first. And at the second time, Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known unto Pharaoh. Then sent Joseph, and called his father Jacob to him, and all his kindred, 75 souls, that's 75 souls. So Jacob went down into Egypt, and died, he and our fathers, and were carried over into Sichem, and laid in the sepulchre that Abraham bought for a sum of money of the sons of Emor, the father of Sichem. But when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another, that's a different king, arose, which knew not Joseph. The same dealt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. In which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. So I want to look at that word exceeding fair. Now, there's a footnote in the working translation that says it means exceeding fair or beautiful to God. And I couldn't see that in Esword because it doesn't have to God in here. But if I go to compare, I'll see those words where it says that he was fair to God. In the LITV, this is one of those literal translations, it says, in which time Moses was born and was beautiful to God, who was reared 3 months in his father's house. Also in the Young's literal translation, it says, in which time Moses was born and he was fair to God, and he was brought up 3 months in the house of his father. So a lot of these translations will say exceeding fair. One of these says, acceptable to God, the DRB, Dewey Rheims Bible. At the same time Moses was born, and he was acceptable to God. The ESV, English Standard Version, says, at this time Moses was born, and he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up 3 months in his father's house. So this helps us to understand that Amram and Jochebed didn't rescue their son or hide him so that he wouldn't be killed when he was a baby just because he was so beautiful in their sight, but they saw that he was beautiful in God's sight, okay? That God had favor upon this child, and it was by believing that they hid him, right? If it's by believing, then there must have been words from God to believe and act upon. It doesn't tell us in any of the narratives that God spoke and said these words, but it says in Hebrews 11 that it was by faith that Moses was hid when he was a baby. So we know from that that God must have told them, and they acted out of obedience to God, because they're presented in Hebrews 11 as an example of people that were diligently seeking God. They wanted to do God's will. They were miserable in Egypt at the time. They were slaves, just worked to death. But they had this baby, and they had a baby boy. And it's, oh no, the king says every baby boy has to be thrown into the river. And they could either do it voluntarily or get caught having a baby boy and have someone grab their child and chuck it in the river. But in this case, God must have told them, hide the baby. But after 3 months, God must have showed him, okay, now's the time to take that baby and put him in a basket. Before you do, use some slime and pitch to make sure it's waterproof, and you send your daughter out there to keep an eye on things. So they put the baby out there, trusting God, and then there's Pharaoh's daughter that sees the basket, opens it up, and has compassion on this little baby and wants to adopt it and keep it as her own, and is even willing to pay the baby's mother to nurse it and raise it up so that she can take it when the time comes. So we learn that from here. Also want to show you, I had to look this up in the interlinear just to make sure that those words that he was beautiful to God are in there. And I have this displayed for you here. This is verse 20. In the interlinear, you have the Greek words with the Greek letters that, if you don't know Greek, it's hard to read that. But underneath each word, it has the literal definition of that word. So verse 20 says, in which time was born Moses and was beautiful to God, who was brought up months three in the house of his father. Okay, so just wanted to show you that it's documented there. And verse 22 says, and Moses was learned or instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and in deeds. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. Now, this is something that it also tells us in Hebrews 11. So let's go to Hebrews 11 and see what it says there. Hebrews 11, this will be in verse 24. The previous verse was about the believing of Moses' parents. In verse 24, it says, by faith, or by believing, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Okay? When he came to years, he was 40 years old at the time, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. That's not how he chose to be identified. You'd think it would have been of great advantage to be in the royal family and have all the wealth and all the good things that come with being in the family of the king. But he chose rather, verse 25 says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Isn't that cool? He decided he would rather identify with the miserable Hebrew slaves than with the richest people in Egypt, which was the richest kingdom in the area at the time. But he chose to do that because they were the people of God. And he must have been taught something when his mother was feeding him and raising him up as a baby. He had that time with his mommy and daddy as he was growing up to learn who he really was, right? And then when he was delivered to the daughter of Pharaoh, then he was raised as an Egyptian and educated as an Egyptian. But all along he knew that he was an Israelite and that these were the people of God, because he chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He said, I would be better off being one of these miserable slaves because they're God's people than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season or for a short time. And again, he did this by faith. He did this by believing. So God must have communicated to him in some way. I don't know if he had the Spirit upon him at the time. But I know this. In Acts chapter 7, where we were, Acts chapter 7, and in verse 23, it says, and when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. So it came into his heart. Again, God must have spoken with him or communicated to him in some way that this came into his heart to visit his brethren. He knew that this was his family, and to visit them, to look at them, to observe them, and to recognize that they were his brethren. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. This would have been the duty of a family member. To avenge somebody is for a member of the family to avenge or make right a wrong that happened to another member of the family. So if a member of his family was killed by this person, then he would be the avenger of blood, okay? He would be the one to make sure justice was done. And he did that, so he avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. So this is avenging. That has everything to do with family. It's like redemption has to do with family members helping each other out. And God treating us as his family. That's a whole other teaching there. But Daniel Bader wrote a book, Redemption, How I Love to Proclaim It. And I would refer you to that. But anyway, verse 25 says, for he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But they understood not. So again, this is something that God must have shown Moses, that God would deliver the Hebrew people, the children of Israel, by the hand of Moses. And he supposed that his brethren would have understood that. But they didn't understand it at that time. He saw them as he was one of their brothers, but they didn't see him as their brother. They saw him as the Egyptian, the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And the next day, he showed himself unto them as they strove. So there were two that were fighting with each other, and would have set them at one again, saying, sirs, you are brethren. Why do you wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Wilt thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday? Then fled Moses at this saying, and was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat two sons. So that's as far as we're going to read from Stephen's testimony. But let's look at what it says in Exodus about this. Okay, we're in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. It's after Pharaoh's daughter names him Moses. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting in Hebrew one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian. He killed him and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now let's go back to Hebrews 11 and we'll finish there, because Hebrews 11 has something to say about him leaving Egypt. Hebrews 11, and we'll start again in verse 24. where it says, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. So he must have learned something, either as a young child or something that God showed him about the Christ, the promised seed of the woman, and the promises that God had made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that they would be taken out of Egypt, that they would inherit the land that had been promised, and that there would be this Redeemer, this promised seed of the woman that would make things right again, not only for his own people, Israel, but for everybody. So esteeming the reproach of Christ, the anointed one, greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. So the reproach of the Christ, there's something about this, because I did a study on the anointed of God, and I learned that Jesus Christ is the anointed. That's why he's called Christ. Christ means anointed one. But there's three categories of people in the Bible that are called anointed: kings, prophets, and priests. Jesus Christ is all three. He's the king, son of David, prophet, like unto Moses, and the high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Now Moses, the reproach of Christ, for Moses to be a prophet of God would be anointed of God. So Moses would fall into the category of one that was anointed by God. And prophets of God are often reproached, okay? They're doing the will of God, they're speaking for God, and because they're speaking for God, those that don't believe will reproach him. Like you think of Joseph, how God showed him these dreams and he shared them with his brothers and they hated him for that and they mistreated him for that. Jesus Christ said a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and in his own house. The people of Nazareth, where he grew up, when he presented himself as the anointed of God, tried to throw him off a cliff, okay? Moses, when he did later go to Egypt and spoke to Pharaoh on behalf of God, saying, let my people go, Pharaoh's response was, I don't know this God that you're talking about, and I'm not going to let him go. And his own people, they reviled Moses for making things worse, because Pharaoh said, well, the people must have a lot of time on their hands, so we're going to give them more work to do. And the people badmouthed Moses for doing the will of God. So there's a reproach of the anointed one. There's a reproach of a true prophet of God. They're not well liked many times. So I can see this both ways. The reproach of Christ for Moses himself to be an anointed one and to suffer reproach because he's doing the will of God in the face of unbelievers, but also the reproach on behalf of the coming Christ, because what Moses would do would have a bearing on the Christ coming. Because like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Moses was willing to commit to the plan that God had that would go beyond his own natural lifespan. He would do things that would have an impact on generations to come, including the coming Christ. So I see a lot in that verse there. The esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Remember, God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He was seeking God. He was willing to be identified as one of the people of God, even though they were miserable Hebrew slaves, rather than enjoy the riches of Egypt, the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And it says in verse 27 that it was by faith, by believing, that he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. So when Moses left Egypt, it wasn't just because he was afraid of the king killing him. He did it by believing. God told him to go. It says he did not fear the wrath of the king. He did it because God told him to do it. It was by faith. It was by believing. He had a word from God, and he believed and obeyed that word. And that's why he left Egypt for the time that he did. It was only temporarily 40 years. Might seem like a long time for a lot of people, but by the time you get to the end of 40 years, it doesn't seem as long as when you're looking forward, you know? But he left Egypt by faith, by believing, and it would be by believing that he would return to Egypt to carry out God's instruction. So that's pretty good stuff about Moses' parents, and Moses himself did what they did by believing, because they were among those that were diligently seeking God. All right.